Beneath the bread. It's another sunny day in Manchester. A hurricane last time we spoke, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, big. Hurricane
Harry. I don't know what it's called.
Hurricane Lillian.
Actually, have you just made that up?
No, I think it actually is.
How do you know this information?
Because that's my auntie's name.
Oh, is it? I feel like you're lying all the way through this podcast.
Yes.
Anyway, we've got some exciting news.
Do we?
We do. Currently, as recording, it's not yet happened. When it goes out, it might have happened. Okay. But me and you will be on stage together for the first time.
Oh, yeah, we will.
Yeah, we were. Bare Left, but I wasn't in that, was
no,
I?
No, you weren't in that.
So, yeah, we're going to do, in Whit Week, we're going to be doing, we haven't yet, it may have happened, a play that Bex Harrison's written.
Beautiful, beautiful play about the state of England.
And then last time we met, Broken Boys was on. That's finished now. What an incredible run that was.
Absolutely, nice, smashed it,
lads. Great bar as well. What an atmosphere in the bar. Everyone having a lovely drink.
And they did. I'll tell you what is nice, and we don't get it that often, but is that when they came out, everyone clapped.
Yeah, I don't know how. I don't like that.
See,
I think that's because I'm miserable.
Yeah, you are.
I feel like we did that bit in there. It's because I hate bowing as well, mate. And you know what? The worst bit about doing a show is having to come out of that door.
That's true.
I fucking hate it.
True. I can't go, mate. I can't do it on my own.
No, you've always got to wait a minute. We're going out. I want a beer. And then there's always someone showering. You're like, what are you showering for? We've all got...
In MasterChef, I left my shoes on stage every night, so I had to wait for everyone to clear.
Oh, that's a freaking nightmare. You'd have maybe thought that through.
Well, but yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so Broken Bunch is good. And we have been nominated for an award. We have been nominated for the People's Choice Award in the Manchester Culture Awards.
Yes, we have indeed.
Yeah,
we have.
Stick that in your handcoat's pipe.
Yeah, handcoat's up.
I don't know how much weight we put on awards, but do you know what? It would be nice to win.
It'd be lovely.
It'd be really lovely. Especially because it's been recognised by Manchester, I think.
Yes.
And I think all of the team, every single one of us has worked really hard. So
I think so.
That'd be nice if you could vote for us. That'd be lovely. And speaking of socials, Talia has taken up as a social media guru. Talia keeps telling me things like, oh, 5,000% engagement. APR.
She shouted at you.
Yeah, she did shout at me because I reposted something and shouldn't have done.
That's not your job anymore.
That's lovely.
I know. It's great.
She felt bad that she shouted, but I was like, please tell me to do less more often.
Yeah.
Welcome to Leah to socials. We should crack on, really, shall we?
Yeah, I reckon so.
Yeah.
Let's get into the nitty gritty.
Here we go then. You've got a question for us, haven't you, George?
Have I?
It's about our guest.
Oh yeah.
What?
We'll
do that again.
Yeah.
You've got a question for us, George, I believe.
Do indeed.
What is that question?
Who the hell is it?
Our guest is, give me a bed. Trained at Salford Uni in theatre and performance practice, he is now a director of theatre. He was a member of the Young Vic Fresh Direction cohort for 23-24. He's artistic director of Red Brick Theatre, who have brought us Pornography, A Number, Sour Milk, Bad Malt and more. He is the recipient of the Hotchkiss Director Award at the Royal Exchange Theatre, with which he has assisted the importance of being earnest and worked at the Den. When it comes to directors, there's only one coming in first. It is the incredible, indomitable Ollie!
Have a bit of that then.
Did you like your intro, mate?
I did. Yeah. The ground just followed me up and...
Did it? You hate that kind of stuff, don't you?
Yeah.
So when you, if you were to come out of that door and everyone clapped, you'd just go back in the door?
Oh, I wouldn't come out the door in the first place. Yep, I'd hide.
We'll get a special Ollie Hurst hatch for which he can escape.
Straight from here into the nearest pub.
You'd probably go. Eagle, wouldn't you? That's your watering hole.
No, oh God, no.
No, I'm the Kings.
I'm the Kings. I apologize.
He's the Eagle. Yeah. I'm the Kings.
We're rivals.
Sounds like some weird.
It's like a Romeo and Juliet story.
I was going with West Side Story.
It actually is. The Kings are gonna get you.
I don't know the tunes. No,
you wouldn't do that either.
What are you drinking, mate?
I'm on a 53 brew, mate. Delicious.
Nice tangy pale ale.
Yeah.
Nice, very good. We're going to find out a little bit more about you because my introduction just kind of scratched the surface.
Oh, my surface is so scratched.
Yeah, of the man and the beast that you are. I'm going to hand over to George for first. Is this the first jingle? You've done a couple sort of already,
haven't
you?
Yeah, sort of.
Well, the first official jingle from George of the Jingle. It is This or That.
This or That with Ollie.
Oh, a little name drop at the end. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. You got your name, because when Chrissy did it, he called her a bitch.
Yeah. No, I heard. No, I didn't call her. I would have preferred that, really.
I just said bitch. There's a difference.
Yeah, yeah. No, I when editing that, I did think about taking it out.
Did you not?
I left it in because I thought you're the one getting in trouble, not me.
Yep.
Anyway, George, we're going to find out a little bit about Ollie. Over to you. This and that.
This or that with Ollie. Day or night?
Day.
Why?
Oh. If I had to guess, I would have said night.
Me too.
Yeah. No, I'm a morning person, really, more than
you're here very early all the time.
I know, it's sometimes because I've got nowhere to go.
That's lovely. We love having you. Next one.
Tea or coffee?
Neither. I'm sorry. I have to pick one. No, hot drinks are not.
Yeah,
for
let's
me.
Just say you've got to pick one.
If I've got to pick one, tea, because coffee makes me panic and shit myself. Any explanation needed?
Let's face it, we don't want that. No, you're absolutely back on.
Comedy or tragedy?
Tragedy.
Yeah. Was that the next question? Yeah, or was that just talking about panicking himself? What did you say?
Tragedy.
Of course. You like sad things,
but,
don't
but
you?
But I do. I've grown to like more comedies, I think.
That's so nice.
You know, it's not all just...
found a lighter side.
Yeah, it's not
years.
All just sadness and badness.
No, sadness and badness.
Mm. Good, good.
Simon Stevens or Sarah Kane?
Oh, that is a belter.
Oh, God.
There is a wrong answer to this.
There is a wrong answer to this, and you think it's okay.
I mean, I know what the wrong answer is.
My answer is Simon Stevens, I think.
Yeah.
Very, very begrudging.
Writing is ridiculous.
Ridiculously good or ridiculously bad?
I just hate it.
Oh, well, that's because you don't understand, Si.
you're probably quite right. I still hate it. Anyway, but I love Simon Stevens.
Her career was so short-lived that I'm sure that if she was still with us and still writing, there would be a plethora of more amazing plays. But Simon's work, there's just so much of it that is so great.
It's really good, isn't it?
It's really bloody good.
Everything he writes, man, it's a bit annoying.
It's just beautiful. Mm. I mean, he writes how people be speaking, isn't that right, guys?
Well, apparently not you.
No, what the fuck was
that? Come on, that's the next speaking. Question.
Takeaway or a home-cooked meal?
Home-cooked meal, definitely, every day of the week.
Right, what are you cooking?
Oh, God, what am I cooking for you right now?
No, for you. You said home-cooked meal with such verb.
For me...
You must know what you're thinking about.
So I have a terrible habit of just making the same things over and over and over again. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if for a week I would eat nothing but the same three meals each day.
That's funny because you wear different clothes every day.
That's wrong.
No, same clothes.
Yeah, clothes every day, same food every day.
That's good though.
Same clothes or same food?
I think both. Do you know why? Simon Cowell wears the same clothes every day, and his explanation...
And he's a legend.
He also
wears his trousers very high.
He says,
someone else said this, Steve Jobs wore the same clothes every day.
Yep.
He said, because I don't waste any time thinking about it. We'll just crack on.
I wish my answer was so inspiring, instead it's because I'm lazy.
Cool. Anyway, what are you cooking?
I would probably make... I like making a curry.
What curry though?
I make a tasty little black bean dal. Loads of paneer, spicy paneer. Paneer is the cheese of the gods.
When am I coming round for curry?
You can come round at some point in the near future.
Lovely.
Keep it ambiguous.
That was the most non-committal answer.
If we keep it ambiguous.
Sometime in the
last. Yeah, sometime never. Next question.
Poo or wee?
Oh, poo. Anyone who knows me knows it's poo.
George and Ollie have a really close relationship, and that's why this or that has just descended into toddler level.
Wee's also good, but poo wins.
Can I ask a question about your thinking that I clearly am not on the page of?
Yes, of course.
Is this the texture of, the action of?
Oh, I have no idea.
Nor do I. I'm assuming the action of.
Yeah.
But also, in conversation, like, if anyone ever says poo and I don't laugh, I need to be taken out back and shot.
Wow, that's severe.
Poo will always be funny.
What's really funny about this conversation is, off camera, Kelsey's about to be sick.
Really?
Yeah.
Because she hates poo.
Do you hate poo?
Really? Yeah.
It makes her like... I'm not saying that I love poo. That would be weird. It's like when you take a dog out for a walk and it does a poo and it does that look up at you where it's like, you've got to pick it up now.
You know they do that because they feel safe.
They do. Because when they're...
Do you feel safe when you're sticking on your poo?
This is an awful podcast.
Shush. A good book or a good film?
A good book.
I think you're lying.
Have you got a favourite book? I think you have.
I've got a recent favourite book. A friend of mine at the start of the year bought me Slaughterhouse 5 by Kurt Vonnegut. And
it was amazing.
No, you're not my only friend, George.
What?
He's so
no matter what people want to believe.
So you're so intelligent. I'm envious of you.
I'm not that intelligent.
You are. You read big names, books. Next question.
Film or TV show?
TV show.
What's your favourite TV show?
Me and my partner are rewatching Breaking Bad at the minute.
Oh,
and
it's my fourth time.
It's her first time. So the joy of kind of, because we're doing long distance at the minute, because she's over in New York.
She is the Big Apple.
So every Sunday we sit down and do Netflix party and watch a couple of episodes. And the joy of hearing her react to things that have happened when I know they're coming.
I've never done a Netflix party, and it sounds
It's not as great as watching Netflix.
Well, no, but also it's cheaper than an effer.
Significantly so.
True that. Good. Layers or a big coat?
Layers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Agreed. Spots or stripes?
Stripes. Do I believe that? Stripes, yeah.
Stripes, yeah.
I think so.
Guinness or whiskey?
Guinness.
Whoa.
Guinness. A whiskey's a treat, isn't it? Sometimes together, delicious. A whiskey chaser. Guinness.
Guinness. Yeah, you're 50% Guinness, aren't you?
Yeah, 70% I believe it is.
Why are you not drinking Guinness now?
Because it does terrible things to something that was asked 3 questions ago.
Wow, let's not mention that again. Kelsey will be sick.
Wet socks or an itchy jumper?
Wet socks. Holes in my shoes. Always got wet socks.
Yeah, he has got holes
in his
shoes.
You've always got wet socks?
Not always. When it's raining, I do.
Yeah.
What? Fix your shoes, man. Get some new shoes.
Shoes are expensive.
This is the winner of the Hodgkids Award.
Mate, there's something about creators, isn't there?
Yeah.
I'll buy some shoes, mate.
Will you?
No. My glasses are broke.
What? You spent quite a lot of money on your jacket. Why did you not go half
come on. The jacket was a treat after some invoices came in, and I regret telling George how much I paid for my jacket.
It's a lot. Yeah, no, for the listener at home, it's a lot. It's a lot.
Thank you, George.
That's okay. Sorry. I didn't. Sneezing or coughing?
Sneeze. I love a sneeze.
I love a sneeze.
Same, yeah.
Do your thing. Ollie does this thing. Sorry, I know this has just turned... This podcast has just turned into what we talk about anyway, but that's fine. Ollie can do a really good fake sneeze.
It's not that good.
It's really
good. I only did it the first time yesterday.
Yeah. For the listener, you won't be able to understand.
But I'll do it.
Okay.
Oh,
thank you.
Not what I expected that, but I enjoyed it.
And do you know what's good about it? It's the sigh afterwards we found out last night.
Yep.
It's the sigh afterwards that makes it feel real.
Yeah. Good.
I tried. Awful. Plan ahead or play it by ear?
Plan ahead. Every single day of the week.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the director for you, isn't
it? It is, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Too much anxiety to play it by ear.
Do you get anxious?
Oh, my God, yes.
Do you?
About everything. I'm anxious right now.
Well, that's because we're grilling you.
True.
Yeah, literally. Scrunch or fold?
Fold.
Okay.
Who scrunches?
Well, this is the thing. We haven't yet found a scruncher, and when we do, I feel like we have to remove it from the country.
Mm.
Eject them or inject them?
Eject them.
Oh, thank God. I thought you could really, like, weird.
Inject.
No.
Last one. Cancel train or a traffic jam?
Traffic jam.
Yeah.
Why? Get the music on nice and loud.
I was in a traffic jam once. I was on the motorway, and I thought, do you know what? I'll probably never stand on a motorway. So I just got out.
Yeah.
Really?
It was great. Yeah, it felt naughty.
Far too afraid.
Really? What?
What if there's a motorbike?
Well, you just checked, didn't you?
True.
Yeah, it was great. I stood on the motorway, and I thought that was quite scary. It's a bit like running through fields of wheat, that wasn't it?
Oh yeah, it was.
Oh God. Well, there we go. That was this or that.
This or that. Ollie out.
Ollie out indeed.
He's still there. Yeah, true.
Just before we started this, slightly earlier in the day, Ollie reminded me that this is not the first time you two have been recorded on radio. Was it live?
Last time was live.
Last time. Can you tell us about that, Ollie? Live.
So probably about a year ago now.
Yeah, it was.
What were we directing here?
Pornography. Play by Simon Stevens. That's the only time I'll say that. So we were doing Pornography last year, and George was supposed to go on the radio for something to do with the band.
I was indeed, yeah.
And nobody in the band could make it.
Ah, yes, I remember. And
we decided to speak about the play.
We thought we'd do a double pronged.
Careful. Yeah.
Double pronged
one. Two-pronged attack.
So we get there, and obviously everything's fine. We're having a great time.
Yeah.
Until we go on air, and then I realise that every word I've ever known kind of just... escapes and turns into mumbles and noises, and the only things that remain are swear words and the names of brands.
Did you swear?
A couple of only a few buggers and bloodies and shits, maybe.
Yeah, there was no shits.
Nothing serious.
There was
no shits.
And what brands did you mention?
There was lots of talk of Guinness. That was good.
So you're this is much more relaxed.
So relaxed.
It's
right
quite intimidating. I mean, we've got a lot of cameras now, haven't we?
Yeah, lots of lights.
And lights. It's crazy, isn't it? I thought podcasts were about sound. So, Ollie, director, very successful director. I would go as far as saying
Thank
very
you.
Good director. You've done work here quite a few times, which is lovely. Where did it all start? Did you always want to be a director?
Oh, God, no. I've got a feeling from speaking to a lot of directors that most directors started directing because they wanted to be actors and realised they weren't very good.
No, I direct sometimes.
Point proven. We wanted to... I knew I wanted to perform for a long time. I went to uni with the idea of wanting to perform and then wasn't very good. And kind of worked out, I like to think I had the self-awareness to realise I wasn't very good, and kind of just fell into directing. Like, we graduated and we had that, you know, that summer you have after you graduate where it feels like that summer's going to last forever the real world doesn't exist.
It's great,
so we decided to put on a play, which I directed, and that was kind of the first foray into it, that was October 2021, so it's... been 3 years.
So that's fast, man.
That's
incredible.
And you instantly, I'm right in thinking, you instantly set up a company.
Instantly, yeah. So myself and Tilly, who we both own and set up Red Brick, we graduated and started the company because we thought, okay, if we make this look professional and feel professional, then people will come. Which I think is something that rings true, actually.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was kind of just a stab in the dark, really, and gave it a go.
It's very interesting you say that, isn't it? We get a lot of sort of tour packs and EPKs and press kits and whatever sent in, and rarely is the first thing I do read them. I look at them and go, does this press kit look like it's from a professional company?
Look at the font.
Yeah, exactly.
I look at the font. I look at the spelling. So but if that press kit doesn't look professional, then it makes it, and it's, you straight away, you said, we set up a company, we look professional.
Yeah, it's so important. I think you need to have a brand. Because then it's all encompassing and it kind of embodies the work that you do. People know this looks professional, so hopefully, touch wood, the show will be of a quality that is professional.
Yeah.
Yeah, big believer of that.
Great. And tell me about I don't know what Young Vic Fresh Direction is.
Yeah, so at the Young Vic, they run a scheme called the Joe Wood Assistant Director and Joe Wood Trainee Assistant Director Scheme. For any young directors, the Young Vic is the place to kind of go, because they've got the Genesis Network, which is like a big network of creatives, and they do loads of job opportunities. And about a year ago, I was applying for the Trainee Assistant Director roles. Didn't get any, unfortunately, but was kept on the database, and then they invited me to be part of a group called Fresh Direction. I believe we were the second year of it, where I think in my cohort there was 15 of us, emerging directors from around the country.
Great.
11 of which were based in London.
Yeah.
So around the country, I think there was me from Manchester, there was a girl from Wales, and somebody from Wolverhampton.
Okay, right.
But it was great. It was kind of like a 6-month kind of light touch course where we go down 2 or 3 times a month and do workshops on kind of what it means to be a director. So not about directing, but about all the other things that come with it.
So your training at Salford was theatre and performance, right?
Yes. Yeah.
The practice of.
Yeah.
So obviously you took from that to be a director, but then this is that course, the Fresh Direction course, was that what really gave you the tools?
I think it gives you the tools to kind of understand what it means to be a director. So all the things all the things that it takes to be a creative, really. So like work-life balance, because my work-life balance has been out of whack for years. Things like budgeting, things like finance.
Great.
Things like pitching. Not the actual practice of directing. So it's very kind of hands-off, not very in the room kind of workshopping things and that kind of stuff. It's all the stuff that kind of comes before and after it, after the act of directing.
So, yeah, great. So a little bit of sort of production kind of levels.
I think so, yeah. But I think where I learn to direct is through making work and making shit tons of mistakes.
And, we spoke to Dom last time and he was talking about the same thing. He was like,
You've got to do. Yep.
So have you... To get where you are now, like, I mean, the Hotchkiss Award, which we'll talk about in a minute, absolutely amazing. Are there some things you look back at that you've directed and gone, oh my God?
I've got everything, literally everything. but that's the nature of it, isn't it? Is that you make something and you think it's, or you hope that it's the best thing you've ever made, and then you look back 6 months later and go, God, if I just had that extra week of rehearsal, if I just got that casting that I wanted, if I just got more time to work things out and plan things. If I had more fucking money.
Yeah.
Amen.
That's the big one. That's the big
one. What do you do then when you're approaching a text? Because all directors are different.
Mm-hmm.
All actors are different. What do you do? We give you a text now. We go, you're putting this on in X amount of weeks, months. What are you going to do?
Read it rigorously and numerous times with spaces in between. I have a really weird practice where I type up a script. So I type it up in the format that I want it to be in. One, because I like working with text in a certain way on the page.
Yeah.
But also because it kind of just gets it in the brain. You get so familiar with it because you've had to sit there laboriously kind of just typing your way through it. So you know every little nook and cranny of the story. Facts and questions, always, like before rehearsal, then in rehearsal, breaking it down into events, that kind of stuff. I think I work quite dramaturgically with script before I get in the rehearsal.
Cool, man. Yeah. It's a lot of table work.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, which I think...
For those who don't know what table work is, it's literally sitting at a table and dissecting the script and getting into it, as opposed to the physical action of being up and moving around.
I think as I've directed more, I've kind of cut down on that a little bit because, I mean, when we first worked together, 3 years ago, it was a hell of a lot of table work.
It was. That was Dumbwaiter, right?
Dumbwaiter, yeah.
So 3 years.
Was that 22? April 22, I think.
Yeah, nearly three. Wow. Through two and a bit, yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Which we talk about that quite a lot and talk about how...
Quite fondly.
Yeah, we do. I had a lovely time.
You don't have to say that.
No, I really did.
But I think the reason why there was so much text work is because at that point you learn to direct through reading books.
Yeah.
And obviously books go through
I feel the same. I kind of feel the same way about actors. There are some actors who should not read books on acting because they're so heady and then they lose that kind of visceral connection.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess there's that kind of world where you're going to learn a lot.
Completely.
Can you tell me I don't need to read books on acting? Just so
you
don't need
to read books. You can't read books on acting. What are you going to say to someone now who's graduated in the same situation? They've got a team of mates and they've gone, do you know what? I'm going to give directing a go. What's your their first
do
foray
it.
Out the block?
Do it.
And what advice for them?
It's big and it's scary and you've got to wrangle with the bull in its horns, but if you don't do it, you never will. I think writers always say it best, where you can't edit and refine something that isn't on a page.
Yeah, you've got to put some clay on the wheel before you make a pat.
Yeah.
Precisely.
Yep.
So if you don't just get up and do it, then no one's going to do it for you. So make the work, it'll be messy, it'll be wrong, it'll be budget, but that's what fringe work is.
So we're going to come onto this later on, but it is going to be wrong. It is going to be messy. Mm-hmm. It's going to be budget unless you're freaking loaded.
Yeah.
What I keep finding a problem is when people go, it's okay, it's fringe, it can be budget, and so they cut corners.
No. So I disagree with that.
Yeah. One of the pieces I keep coming back to, we used to, in the old gaff, we had a studio, and it was just a black box, and somebody constellations there, and they had no budget.
Yep.
But what they did was pin 40 origami birds into the ceiling, which cost nothing.
Yeah.
Fishing wire and a bit of paper. And it was so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, that is how you deal with no budget.
Yeah, right? completely. And that's the joy of fringe theatre, is that you have to find creative ways to overcome having shit all money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's not an excuse to be lazy and do nothing.
No.
Because when you are lazy and do nothing, the show is normally pretty terrible.
Mm.
So you need to find creative ways around things.
Yeah, and if your crutch is, oh, it's fringe, then...
Then you're not making work for the right reasons.
No, you're not.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but you've got to beg, steal and borrow.
God, yep, freaking A.
Get whatever you can, work with whoever, like if anyone is kind enough to lend you the time, my God, take it.
Yeah.
You have to.
Absolutely. What, and on the kind of reverse side of that then, from a director's point of view, what kind of actor do you want to rock up in the rehearsal room on day one?
An actor who makes offers and plays, someone who's done the homework, basically. Yeah. Someone who understands and reads and is willing to learn, but is also willing to take risks.
Mm.
Because those risks might not always be right, but I think as a director, your job's to kind of steer the ship and steer them in the right direction. And normally, the actors who do make bold choices, who have done the homework, make the right decisions. So you don't have to have those hard conversations, but sometimes you do. Yeah, people who are willing to play and make offers.
And fail?
And oh God, and fail, yeah, because it's rehearsal is a constant process of failing.
Yeah.
That's the whole point of it. If we all came in on day one and did the right thing, then there'd be no point in it.
Yeah.
Just put the show on.
Mm. Yeah, just learn the lines and get on. Yeah, see exactly. You in the tech. Yeah.
And we constantly say it as well, or I think I say it, maybe I don't say it out loud. The day as an actor, if you come off stage and you go, fucking nailed that, that was great, yeah. Quit.
Yeah.
Because there is nothing else to follow or strive for when that fulfillment has been completed.
Completely. Yeah. And also, I don't think you can strive for perfection with it, because I don't think that perfection exists.
No.
I was speaking to Josh Roach, who directed Ernest, and he said something really funny to me about a play is always better on the page than it is on stage, because on the page, when you're reading it, that world of imagination is completely perfect, yeah, and exactly how you want it to be. Yep. And as soon as it's up on stage,
you've got limitations.
Exactly. Which I was shocked when he said it, because obviously our job is to make theatre and is to make it happen. And without that event, we don't have a job.
Yeah.
but it was really true when you think about
it. It's what I always think, and I've never done it very much, but I'd love to do radio. Because I find that if we four now are in doing a radio play,
yeah,
and we're in a castle, or we're in a lounge, yeah, or a cave, all four of those caves, castles, lounges are different, but perfect in our brains.
Yeah.
And I love that, because we're just stood in front of a microphone.
Mm-hmm.
But the world in which we're in, yes, it's a mansion, but what the details are, and I think that is wonderful.
Yeah.
That ability to have an imagination that separates every one of us, but also brings us together, mm-hmm, in the same world.
And then some of the best theatre and some of the best set design, some of the best design and stuff is things that evoke that feeling in you. They're so specific that they're not specific.
Yeah. Children's theatre, I find, does.
Yes.
At children's theatre, because for some reason, children's theatre makers go, I'm going to allow the audience of children, mm-hmm, to use their imagination.
Completely.
Like The House with Chicken Legs is one of the best things I've ever seen. It was stunning, and it was, and in it, a house lifted up and legs ran, but it was puppetry, like just unbelievable, because, mm-hmm, it allows you to use your imagination. I went to see The Life of Pi. I hated the story. I didn't think the acting was all that good.
Yep.
My word, did I enjoy it?
Did you enjoy that lion?
Tiger. That tiny lion.
Tiger or lion? I can't remember which.
But yeah, imagination is wonderful, but I guess in this instance, talking to Josh, that imagination can be
completely.
It needs to be boxed, doesn't it, for us to put
completely.
It on stage?
Because theatre is an act of imagination, because no matter how great your production is, you are not where you say you are.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You're just not. If you're doing Ernest, for example, yes, you're on stage and you can have a beautiful 1895 Victorian structure, but you're not, you're on stage.
Mm.
So the audience needs to have the agency to have that imagination.
Yep.
That's why I like work that's set in liminal spaces or set within metaphors, because it allows that imagination.
Yeah, you're sort of famous here anyway for taking everything off the stage, flats, blacks, everything, which is joyous. It's great. Tell us about, you mentioned it, tell us about the Hotchkiss then. So what is that? How did it come about? And what did it involve?
So the Hotchkiss Director Award is really kindly set up by the Hotchkiss family. And I believe this year is the first year where it's running for directors. It's run in the past for theatre companies. But this year, the goal was for it to support an early career director from or based or with ties to Manchester, to have a base at the Royal Exchange, to assistant director production, to assistant direct on the Royal Exchange's Den Festival, which is the community engagement kind of section, which this year was in Rochdale, and to have an R&D for a new idea.
Amazing.
Which is great. And how did it come about? It was just put online and I saw it. I was like, okay, that's me.
I'll have a bit of that.
Yeah, I'm going for it, with very little expectations. And then lo and behold, it kind of came
So you've done Ernest, you've done the Den, and there's an R&D?
There's an R&D, yes, which is going to be in late October, because I do not know what I want to do yet.
Okay. So you take an unfinished script, a script, an idea,
I'm quite certain that I want to do either a piece of new writing or devise something, because devising is something that I used to do quite a lot, and something I've not really done for a long time, and I quite like that idea of having a root or a nugget of an idea and then kind of making something out of that.
Mm.
So yeah, possibly return to that kind of strand of making work.
Great. And then Hotchkiss Awards done, 25 years in the future, someone goes, you've got a limited budget, what do you want to direct?
Unlimited budget?
Yeah. What play are you directing?
Gods.
Or, if not Unlimited, every play has the same budget. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so yeah, yeah, yeah. Basically, what
play do you want to direct? Which, out of all the plays in the world, which one are you going to direct?
That's really hard.
It is, isn't it?
And
of course, it might be new writing, so it's not yet written.
One day I know that this isn't the answer. I'm just going to talk you through some of my thinking. One day I know I definitely want to direct a production of Miller's A View from the Bridge.
You mentioned this the other day. Yeah, I'd
really love to do that at some point. On the Shore by Simon Stevens. Yeah, it's magnificent and beautiful.
Still swimming around in there.
Swimming around in that tiny little brain of mine.
Because we did a reading of that.
Yes. It's a magnificent play that is 3 hours long.
And it scared the shit out of all of us.
Yeah.
I was fucking well up for it, mate. I was not scared. I was fucking in for that.
I was petrified. Yeah. There's a play called Wojciech by George Buchner, which is the first ever episodic play, and I would really love to adapt and direct it at some point.
Great.
And that's probably the answer.
There you go.
Beautiful. What a way to take us into...
the adverts.
The adverts.
The adverts in a minute.
Welcome to the adverts. It's just Simon on his own. George has fucked off somewhere. I'm here just to give you guys a quick reminder about our Giz a Quid campaign. It's still going. It's still rolling on. We have a lovely bunch of people who very kindly give us £1 a week. Although it doesn't feel like a lot, it is the easiest way to help. And also, strangely, the best way to help. The best way, because if you give us £1 a week, you might not notice it. Obviously, some people may, but you might not. It's less than a coffee, way less than a beer. It's only the price of a trolley if you choose to go and nick it. And we're calling upon our community to just re-inject a little bit of life in this campaign. Giz a Quid. You can go to 532.com/quid. And that money will just help us survive. If we can get enough of you every week donating, that will help us build our reserves, continue to be able to build new writing in the theatre, put some more outreach work on the map so we can get back involved with Manchester Children's Hospital School and across the community in Greater Manchester. It'll help us look for a hearing induction loop, audio description booth, launch some fantastic programs we've got in the pipeline. But yeah, Giz a Quid, 532.com/quid. It's really easy to sign up. And all we're asking for is a quid, 2 quid, 3 quid, whatever you can spare. And you can do that every week, you can do it every month. But £1 a week is where we are heading. Head to that link, 532.com/quid. Click on the blue button, click on weekly, enter £1. And you would be massively helping us. That's just a pound a week. We hate asking for money, and we do it all the time. So I thought I'd squeeze this one in here. Anyway, enough of me rambling on. Back to Simon George in another universe. Adverts out. There you go, George. That's why you do the jingles. Yeah. Yeah. Woo! Yeah.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back.
Well, that was dry, mate. Do you want to start again?
Hi, everybody. Welcome back.
Good. George is really enthused by part two of our interview with the wonderful Oliver Hurst. I'm going to repeat the last, one would say, rhyming couplet of my intro because I enjoy it so much. It's ego for me.
John Cooper Clarke over here.
Yeah, absolutely. Crouton rhymes with Luton. That's the other way around. Fucked it. Anyway, when it comes to directors, there's only one coming in first. It's the incredible, indomitable Oliver Hurst.
What does indomitable mean?
It means unbeatable.
No.
I think, Ollie, you probably know.
You've Thesaurus.com before.
You're actually, it's rhyme zone.
Yeah, rhyme zone.
I know that didn't rhyme. I rhymed first.
Yeah.
That was
first with Hurst.
We've been talking about all things directing. We're talking about your dream jobs, what you want in actors, all about the Hodgkiss, all about all the stuff you're doing at the Big. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. We're going to get into the section of the pod that we like to call Real Talk.
Real Talk. Real Talk.
Do you know he's not drunk? It's bizarre, isn't it?
No.
What are you drinking, by the way?
53 Brew, mate. Delicious and tangy and zesty.
Oh, are you talking about me or the brew?
Delicious. Full stop.
Here we go with Real Talk then. What's going to happen is I am going to give you a sentence.
Yep.
It's not necessarily your view. It's not necessarily my view. It is just a sentence.
Yep.
And we're going to chat about it. What? Chat about it with a bottle of water. My sentence is, for Real Talk, the difference between quality fringe theatre and main house theatre is minimal apart from money. Discuss.
I think I've said that in the past.
You have said it. But I'd like to start with, it might not necessarily be your opinion, but you did say, you said this after working at the Royal Exchange, and this isn't a slight on the Royal Exchange at all.
No.
They've got more money than us. But you said this about rehearsing for the importance of being earnest, right?
Yes.
What do you mean?
I mean that I think the difference between a lot of the quality fringe theatre work that's being made here in Manchester and things that go on in the rehearsal rooms at places like the Royal Exchange, other local theatres like the Octagon, producing theatres, is just a huge chasm of money. But that huge chasm of money also means there's a lack of time for fringe theatre makers, a lack of commitment for fringe theatre makers. But I think we're on the right track, is the point that I'm making. I didn't walk into the rehearsal room in there and go, oh shit, everything I've been doing has been wrong.
Yeah,
yeah, that's important.
And I went, oh, we're all doing the right thing.
We're doing the same thing.
But we're all skint.
Yeah.
And that was a really reassuring thing.
So their process is the same?
Completely, completely. Because that's how, I mean, everyone's got different processes.
Yeah.
But on
the framework.
Yeah, the framework of the process is there. And if you care enough about the quality, then it will be there. It's just you don't have thousands of pounds to spend on certain things.
Well, one of the big things we talked about, so let's talk about Broken Boys that was on recently.
Yeah.
Their first night was press night.
Mm-hmm.
How many previews did The Importance have before press night?
Five, I want to say.
Yeah. Five previews?
Five previews.
And how many weeks rehearsal?
4 weeks followed by tech week, then into previews.
4 weeks of rehearsal, 1 week of tech week, a week of previews, and then press night.
Which a whole week and a tech week, and I've seen the show, that's a whole week. The tech isn't the...
It didn't feel like a 1 week tech week.
I think it's just industry standards.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. Like
Just because there's so many variables and so much fine-tuning, and obviously moving through a play that is as long as Ernest takes time.
Yeah, and I want to say again, this isn't us going, a week for tech week.
No.
I would love a week for tech week. And fair play to you, Royal Exchange, and all the other theatres out there can do it. This is amazing. And we saw the show, and the best thing in it by far, it was brilliant, but the best thing was James Quinn walking across stage with a leaf blower.
I proper lolled. I enjoyed the coffee machine.
It was great. Well done, James, if
you're
listening.
Great
show. Lovely show. Massive budget.
Yes, huge budget.
And it's mad, isn't it? I actually, unless you get Arts Council funding, I don't budget my shows.
Mm-hmm.
I go, this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
How much does that cost? All right, I'll find the money. Which is how we have to do it. You said early on, you've got to beg, borrow and steal, right?
Oh, yeah. Completely. Totally.
We find the money and that's what you got to do. And we also talked about the brilliance of theatre companies and directors who don't have any money but make beautiful theatre whilst recognising that that lack of budget means that the set they want can't happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Otherwise, you build a shit version of that set.
Yep.
But yeah, like, we have a theatre. This is a theatre.
Yeah.
I do not know how people without theatres put shows on.
It's too expensive. Difficulty, yeah.
It's too expensive, man. I mean, we run initiatives here of things like 53 New, which is reduction, and they pay 10 days after the show is finished because their ticket sales provide that capital that they might not normally have. But it's just, it's not feasible.
It's not. I mean, thank the Lord that I have someone like Tilly who runs the company with me, because she is a whiz at Excel spreadsheets and budgets and that kind of stuff, because my brain does not work that way.
No.
I think I'm probably quite similar to you in that way, where it's, I want to make this piece of art and I will do it no matter what. And luckily, Tilly is the person who goes,
yeah,
have you thought about this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Dave here it doesn't understand set designs from any other company. I know this because he's tried to work at other companies.
Yes.
And they gave him a CAD drawing of a set.
Yep.
He didn't understand it. And so all he knows about sets is what I draw on the back of napkins.
Yep.
Like, that's how we work. Mm-hmm. And that's not good or bad or indifferent. It's just what we do. Because we haven't got the money or the time to do that.
It's a resources thing, isn't it?
The brilliant Kash Arshad has been in here recently for a couple of meetings.
Oh, yeah.
And he comes in with his set designer and they have a massive model box.
Yep.
And they sit and talk through it and talk through the model box. And it's absolutely beautiful. I mean, the rest of the indie fringe scene, we have a set that lives in our head.
Mm-hmm.
We never see a model box.
No.
And then when we build it, it's often different to what's in our head.
Yep.
Because it doesn't fit in the space. So we have to adapt it. And we get that set for 2 days before the show goes on.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's insane if you think about it.
It is insane. And it's that lack of rehearsal time that is... That lack of rehearsal time, that lack of resource into the planning and preparation of the show that is, unfortunately, the killer sometimes. Mm. Because, like you say, as a single person, you live with that idea in your head. And it's so hard to translate that without all of that money and all of that time.
Yeah.
There's sometimes it gets a tech and you go, shit, okay, this isn't working, this isn't working. Cut, 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 cut. And you end up with what you're left with. Which can still be amazing and magnificent and beautiful. And dreams shouldn't die because of the lack of money.
No.
But sometimes you've got to plough on and make the work.
Which is in itself, as artists, disappointing for us, isn't it? Margaret Thatcher once said, and I bring this up a lot because it's actually I'm sure there's probably someone who said this much more eloquently, it's our burden and also our joy, that Margaret Thatcher said, the thing about artists is if you take the money away, they'll still make art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we fucking do.
Yep.
But because of that, everyone's going, I'll crack on, you'll be all right.
Yeah.
Like,
you'll make art about not having any money.
Yeah, yes. That's mad, isn't it, though, that we do that? Nobody makes money in theatre. Edinburgh Fringe is happening right now, yeah?
Yes, it is.
And I can't think of a quicker way to lose money than putting a play on Edinburgh Fringe. I mean, obviously I can.
Yes.
Put it all on red. But
could double it.
It could. And that's something that can't happen in Edinburgh.
No.
You do not double your money. But we still do it. It's the second most visited country in the UK because of the Fringe Festival.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The spectacle of the Fringe Festival is insane. It doesn't make any money.
No.
Unless you are Jimmy Carr doing your stand-up.
Doing a show, yeah. Of course. I've never done Edinburgh before. I've been as a punter and a viewer. And I've got friends who have made amazing work up there or for there. And I know that it is a financial minefield. But I would do it next year or the year after or the year after.
Would you?
Yeah.
I did 4 weeks. I didn't fund it. I wasn't paid.
Mm-hmm.
And a mate of mine who ran the production company, he funded it through some money he'd got. Three-hander, we sold really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
To sell out in Edinburgh was like unreal. Yep. Two things. He didn't make any money. Mm-hmm. The company didn't make any money.
Yep.
And I would not do it again unless I was paid.
Yep.
And my accommodation was paid for, which means I'm never doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The first thing I do is when people go, when we want to go to Edinburgh, I go, why?
Yeah.
And if they say exposure, I'm like, don't.
No.
If you want to go, have a really freaking amazing time, spend loads of money and get mm-hmm. pissed every single day mm-hmm. and meet beautiful people, then go.
Yeah.
If you want to go and get discovered, ain't not going to happen.
No.
I mean, of course it might. Of course it might.
Needle in a haystack situation.
Yeah. So what does money buy in theatre?
What does money buy in theatre?
Yeah, we're talking about money. Why do we need it? Because nobody knows, actually. One of the things, we run a workshop here for young creatives, potentially, and one of the things we do is we ask them to list all the jobs in theatre,
mm-hmm.
how much they think they'll be paid, and then work out the budget.
Okay.
And then we say, how are you going to make money? They sell tickets. One said that tickets had to be £300 for them to make money, and I was like, yeah.
God, I would not pay £300.
No. So what does money buy in theatre?
Money buys time is the main thing, I think.
Yeah.
The wages of the people who are making and putting on the work is so important, and it's unfortunately a luxury, I suppose. Yeah. As in it, I don't really know anybody on the fringe who can pay equity minimum for the performers, let alone the backstage team.
Mm.
Money buys time, money buys set, props, costume. Money buys marketing.
Marketing.
Money buys venue.
Marketing is huge, isn't it?
It's huge. It's so important. And yes, you can do it on a budget, but if you want to reach lots of people, you're going to have to spend some money. Money makes the world go round.
Mm. Money. It does. It absolutely does. And it's a real tough battle, I find, certainly here. And you'll agree with this as well, George. Whether it is paying the staff that work here, or whether it's making theatre work, everything that we do here, for instance, we want everyone to come and watch the show,
mm-hmm.
which means the ticket prices have to be 12 quid,
yeah.
13 quid. That's not enough.
No.
Do you know what I mean? We did Bear Left at Christmas with a cast of 15.
Mm-hmm. each one of those got a profit share.
Yeah.
And I think it was a guarantee. It was a guarantee with a profit share on top.
Yeah.
But I think every actor came away with 500 quid. Something like that?
Yeah.
That's, which is good for a profit
share. It's amazing.
It's great.
With a guarantee as well. Mm-hmm. But that was with a corporate sponsor.
Yeah.
That was with 53.2 putting money in.
Yeah.
Like, it's just impossible.
Well, what that was with also was the team, so the cast, but in the cast was the lighting designer.
Yeah.
The marketing
videographer.
You know. Built the set. We built the set. You know.
Yeah, it's unreal.
We were the band. We were all of it. Like, yes, it's absolutely. All as one.
Completely. Like, and it can feel like a real moral dilemma sometimes as someone who owns a company and puts shows on is...
How to keep it accessible, how to pay people.
Completely. We're going to make this work and we're going to spend time doing it and we're going to pour heart, soul, blood, sweat and tears into it and you're going to make shit all money from it. As am I, as is Tilly, as is the rest of the cast. And unfortunately, that's the way it is at the minute.
But as Thatcher said, we do it anyway.
We do. We keep on, don't we? It's just hard, man. It's really hard to make theatre.
Yep. And that's why it boils down to the kindness and people's passion for making work.
Mm.
The people in Manchester who have been part of shows, the people in Manchester who have made shows, we do it because we love it. And there's not really, on the fringe at least, there's not really any other reason to do it. Because you're not paying your bills with it.
No.
I can tell you that for free. So we do it because we love it. And those people who say yes constantly are the best people on earth. I remember when we were doing The Dumb Waiter, I very, very stupidly tracked how many hours I worked and how much money we all took from the profit share.
Yeah, yeah.
I was earning something like 4p an hour.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I will never do it again because it's completely reductive.
There's no point.
Pointless.
Yeah, there's no point.
You made an incredible memory, though, and a great piece
of exactly. And I wouldn't change that for the world.
And you met me.
And you met George.
I did meet you. But yeah. Was for my opinion on you.
Lovely stuff, mate. Look, it's actually quite depressing, isn't it?
It is. Yes.
We're not going to talk about it anymore.
No,
we're going to move on to our next segment.
Yes.
Which is question from the panel.
Question from the panel. Boom.
What? I just thought there was going to be one more noise.
Oh.
No.
Bah.
There it is.
There it is.
My God, it was worth the wait.
Thank you.
This is our question from the panel. I'm going to say this might be one of the best things we've ever asked a guest.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No pressure.
Question
then.
From the panel. Ollie Hurst, if you had to swap your legs for any other animal's legs,
yeah,
what animal would you choose?
Straight in. You just went, yeah.
Budgie.
No, God, no, not a budgie. Can you imagine me on a budgie's legs?
Yes. It's
terrifying, yeah. Mate.
Sometimes terrifying. After a couple of pints, mate, that's what it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, true, yeah. True.
Dancing.
If I had to swap my legs for an animal's legs, and I'm not going to choose one that's really close to humans, because that's boring.
That is boring.
No. So boring.
I just want to clarify as well, you can't say things like millipede and think you're getting a million.
I was going to say millipede.
No, you just get two millipede legs, which arguably be worse than a budgie.
Significantly so. Literally right before you said that, my head went,
millipede. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, this is harder than the play question.
Do you want to know ours?
Yes, please, please, please.
I think I'm going for something insane like kangaroo.
Oh, kangaroo's a good shout. That's so useful, though. That's not funny. That's useful.
Oh, I was going practical. If this happens, I'm Bagsy and kangaroo.
Yeah.
I'm going for a cheetah because two of the cheetah's legs still quite a lot faster than my legs.
I think you're right on some levels, but I also feel like a cheetah's entire body is tuned to be running fast.
You've both gone very useful.
Yeah. You're going to go millipede.
I was thinking silly.
Well, what's your silly answer? Go on.
Millipede is quite good, isn't it?
Well, it'd be ridiculous.
I don't think a millipede's legs could hold up my body.
Two, like, what
that's
would look
funny.
Like hair
yeah, that is
coming
quite
out
funny,
the bottom
isn't
of
it?
You.
Cats. No. A slug? Yeah, it's not really a leg.
They've just got one foot.
That's good.
So, but now I need to know. Does that go on your boss?
My what?
Your bar, the bit between your balls and your ass.
My gooch.
You just got, yeah, your gooch. Have you just got slug?
Your ass. I got slug gooch.
Tell me you've heard of bars.
I've never heard bars before.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard gooch, I've heard taint.
Gooch.
I've heard the bridge of the body.
I've heard all these things.
Is that where your slug foot is going?
I imagine so. As a slug.
That's weird, mate.
I'm into that.
You're just going to slug around in your gooch.
With a slug foot, could I go at walls like slugs?
Yeah, man.
Oh, fuck, I'm going slug.
Yeah, but you'd be on your gooch.
Yeah.
And also, when you go up the wall, you'd be like, oh, look at me slugging.
Oh. No, because slugs stick, don't they?
Yeah, but you're stuck with your gooch.
Yeah, but it's a slug's gooch.
But your head now is going, ugh. You look like George abseiling.
I'd have great abs.
You would.
No one's looking at your abs when you've bottom half of you as a fucking slug.
Wait, guys. Yeah, you're right. But check this six-pack out.
Check out that eight-pack.
Fuck you guys.
Yeah, well, there you go. That is the
That's
most,
good.
That is the most ridiculous answer I could have ever imagined. Yeah,
thank you.
Well done us for like raising the level there. Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Good God. Right, moving swiftly on. It is time, George, for question from the guest.
Question from the guest.
Question from the guest.
I dropped the beat bomb.
The beat bomb?
Beat bomb. Bananas. What's your question for us, Mr.
Okay,
Host?
So you wake up and you're in the Roman Colosseum. You are stark bollock naked.
Great.
I'm
going to win.
Yep. Okay, so.
That's it.
Not me and you.
The gates open.
No, I didn't think it was a fight. Whoever's coming in, I'm winning.
The gates open, and your first victim, not victim, first challenger,
right,
is 1 1-year-old. And then.
Curveball.
That one's over. We've done it.
That's not the question.
The second round is 2 2-year-olds.
Right.
Then 3 3-year-olds. Yeah. 4 4-year-olds, so on and so forth. What round do you get into?
I don't think I could kill a 1-year-old, if I'm honest with you, mate.
Really? You're giving
up? I think
up?
I'd give my life up.
But that'd be a slow and painful battle.
What, with a 1-year-old?
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to wait until they kill you.
Yeah, you're going to start.
Oh, the 1-year-old has to kill me?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, God! Fantastic question. Yeah,
thank you.
I thought I was just going to go, I surrender, and then the gladiators would kill me.
No.
Oh, God. Well, they'd have to be at least 11.
11-year-olds.
Yeah, because I reckon they could deliver a good boot.
Mm-hmm. And also, you get those 11-year-olds at like 6 or 4.
How many of them? Hang on, though. Whoa,
it's a random selection.
Who's choosing that?
Who's choosing
the people that choose the people for Pointless?
Well, Alexander Arnold and Richard Osman.
I think you've drawn out my hat, mate.
No, it's Alexander Arnold and Richard Osman.
Right, brilliant. Choosing 11 11-year-olds to kick me to death.
Yep. We asked 11 11-year-olds.
Are the 11-year-olds wearing any footwear?
No, they're also naked.
Good God.
Just so it's a level playing field.
Mate, it's not level anyway, they're 11. There are 11 of them.
Yeah.
I think my first thought would be, they can't kick me to death in bare feet.
11-year-olds can.
I think they could maybe strangle me. Do they know their mission is to kill me?
Oh, yeah, it's a fight to the death.
Okay. I'd go 11 11-year-olds is where I think.
That's when most people stop.
Is it?
It is.
Actually?
Yeah.
I think I'd stop early.
Oh, many years working in bars and kitchens, trust me.
This is outstanding.
I think I'd stop earlier than that.
Who's going to kill you?
I think it'd start getting hard at 5.
Five-year-old?
Mate, have you seen 5-year-olds?
That's thin.
You're 6'4".
Thank you. That's one for the record. I'm 6'4", everybody. You? Yeah, I am.
That's like fighting just, five of Finn.
Okay, no, yeah. But
that's not making
Sorry,
it
Chris and Kim. I'm just doing it for age. Finn's not in any danger.
unless Richard Osman and Alexander Arnold have something to do about it.
Well,
yeah, and to be honest, even though you say everyone stops at 11, I think that is just the correct answer.
Clearly.
No, I answered your question. I said slug.
I said 11.
Okay.
I said 11-11.
I think I'd have to go like 9 9-year-olds, I reckon.
Yeah, I think I'm probably bowing out there.
They're not going to kill you, mate.
There's 9 of them.
No.
And you've just had 8 year olds and 7 centimeters.
The only way a 9-year old can.
Mate, you're knackered. You're knackered.
No shoes.
I'm not knackered. I'm
talking about 8 year olds. Bruce Lee never wore shoes.
But he was 40 something. A 9-year old with no shoes is not going to damage you. They've got very soft feet. They're just not. If they're wearing Doc Martens, I'd take 9 9-year-olds.
That's a cool 9-year-old.
Yeah, that is a cool 9-year-old.
A 9-year-old barefoot, they can only hurt you with their feet.
Elbows? Knees?
I can't see a 9-year-old elbowing me in the head.
And I know your head's quite ripe for the taking.
Yeah, but it's quite high. How high are these 9-year-olds?
But maybe you're bending over to get another one.
Just kicking them back.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Chest push.
Yeah. Okay, the thing is, though, you get to like 13.
Yeah.
And like.
Oh, 13's hard.
You're not going to win.
No, I know, but some of them are still the same as they were them when they were 12.
Yeah, but 50% of them are adults.
Yeah, like.
Not 50% of 13-year-olds are adults.
Not zero.
Well, it depends what Alex and. What's his. Who's picking?
Yeah.
Alexander Arnold and Richard Osman.
Right. What a fantastic question.
What a beautiful question.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, that was good. Which takes us swimmingly to the end of this episode with Ollie Hurst. Ollie, can you take us out of the episode with your TED Talk?
Yes. Short and sweet. Something that Simon Stevens said on a podcast that I believe my parents have instilled in me from a young age. And it's just about working hard. Simon Stevens said, I don't believe in notions of artistic genius. you work hard at, you work hard at what you do and you do it well. And I think that's so important. I think working hard is the most important trait that anybody can have. Because yeah, you can be talented, but if you don't work hard, you've got shit all.
Great.
Very good.
Let's leave it there.
A fucking man.
Hell ladies, yeah. Gentlemen, beautiful people all around the world, put your hands together, please, for Mr. Overhead!
Thank you, Ollie. That was a joy.
Let's over and out until the next one. Keep listening, folks, all three of you. And we will. Yeah, Mum. We'll be back soon. Namaste!